Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Last week I was not here. I was doing graduation stuff, University of Georgia, with my wife and family all in and everything. So I'd like to thank Greta for giving such a wonderful talk, and Marilyn helping and all that. So if you missed it last week, it's online, so listen up. It's about change, which is always relevant. So I invite you to hear that. But this morning, as Angela said, I'm going to speak on a subject that most of us don't give a lot of attention to, and that is the subject of dealing not just with death, because as we all get older, we have issues with parents and siblings and sometimes even children, sad as that is, but dealing also with our own demise. It's something I like to do once a year or so, because this event that we call transition, as Angela said, that's sort of a metaphysical term, but it actually means, it's a euphemism for what most people call death, is one of those things that we all know, at least on an intellectual level, happens to all of us eventually. I mean, everybody in here is clear about that, right? Okay, good. Good. We're all on the same page. Great. But we try not to think about it very much, probably because we all find it difficult, if not impossible, to visualize a world that doesn't have us in it. It's really hard to do, okay? And that's part of it. But we also don't like to think about it because we don't know what's waiting for us after it happens, right? That's another part of it. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit today. And we also hate to have us high control types who tend to gravitate to this kind of a teaching. We hate to have our life disrupted by something that we can't predict or plan around. You know, and so we hate the idea of having to be ready all the time because we don't know when it's going to happen. I'm going to talk a little bit about that too. So something I've noticed over the last few years is this. It doesn't matter how long anyone lives, including you or me, most of us would still like just a few more years or months or weeks, right? Am I right? Most people, if they've been given a diagnosis, they'll tell you that. And we want that time to do all the things that we haven't gotten around to doing yet. Of course, if we were being logical, you would think that 50 or 60 or 80 or even 90 years would be plenty of time to do just about anything we could ever want to do, because people who have wonderful full lives get it all done in sometimes a relatively short period. And of course, that would be plenty of time to do everything we wanted to do if we started out on day one knowing exactly what we wanted out of life. That'd make it easy. And if we were born knowing exactly what was important and what wasn't. But that's not the way it seems to work. Instead, many of us find ourselves spending the first, say, third of our lives doing what other people would think is important. Then we do the middle third of our life trying to discover what we think is important. And finally, in the final third or so, doing the things that actually are important. Now, the problem with that kind of strategy is it's a good strategy if you know when you're going to be leaving, but sometimes that third, that last third, gets cut a little closer than we think. Recently, I was reading an article on the internet, and they were talking about an insect called the mayfly. Interesting. A mayfly has a lifespan of only one day. Okay, so it's born, it eats, it reproduces, and it dies all in one day. And except for the reproducing part, it doesn't sound like a whole lot of fun, you know, going through all that kind of stuff. I mean, if the weather was bad for one day, your whole life could get rained out, you know, absolutely wiped out, okay? And if you couldn't find another mayfly you were compatible with, you wouldn't be able to do any of the fun stuff either. So, you know, it's really kind of a shaky, shaky existence. Now, we can laugh at that, but I truly believe that there are people around who are living lives that are not a whole lot different from what the mayfly does. They relive the same one day, day after day after day for years and years. They wake up, they eat, they go to work, they come home, they watch television, they go to bed. All right? That's their life. Now, occasionally they may find somebody interesting, a non-mayfly person who's willing to amuse them, but that usually doesn't last very long. Or else they just find someone exactly like them, perfectly compatible, and they both settle down to their little mayfly existence, going through that, and that's the way they continue to live until one day one of them goes to the doctor, and the doctor gives them some bad news. Then, all of a sudden, life becomes important. So some of them go, gee, assuming they're physically capable of doing it, they decide now's the time to travel the world. Now's the time to find my true love, write the great American novel, learn Chinese. But because there isn't enough time left, they end up leaving this life with a pile of regrets about how much of their life was wasted and how many things they never got to do. Now, I know this sounds a little fatalistic, but we all know people like this. But I believe there are far too many people in the world who are living a variation of that kind of life. So my goal, when I got into this teaching and really started to pick it up and get interested in it, first of all, was to not be one of those people. That was my goal, okay? And as a student of this philosophy that we call the science of mind, I want to share a couple things that I've learned. Now, this is not wisdom, it's experience. Don't get them confused. I would like to share with you this morning two things that I believe we need to do to live the kind of life that I think most of us want to live. Or to be more precise, there's actually one thing we need to do and one thing we need to stop doing. Now, the first one, the one we need to do, is one that we talk about in here quite a bit. The first thing we need to do is to start living our life every moment of every day in ways that express, this is the book answer, all the wonderful attributes of our divine self. If you read the book, that's what it says. And I hear some people going, what the hell does that mean? Okay? It sounds a little vague, but it's really actually a very straightforward and simple concept. What I mean is we need to become comfortable. Now, let me change that. We need to become more than comfortable. We need to become passionately excited about living and loving and working and playing and being. You got those five? Living and loving and working and playing and being. There's more, but that's a good starter. Okay. Being the vibrant, powerful, interesting, creative, fearless, healthy, prosperous, and intelligent spiritual beings that we were on the day we were born. On the day we were born. We need to be very clear that that is who we were before we got here. That is who we need to be while we're here. And that is who we are going to be after we leave. That covers pretty much everything. In other words, whatever the situation turns out to be in the afterlife, and nobody really knows what that is, it's all theory, we are still going to be this same individual consciousness that we've always been, only in some other form, either different physical form, energy, light, whatever it happens to be, or something else we haven't discovered yet. So the important thing for us to know now in what we call this life, because we are a never-ending work in progress, when we go from life to, as we know it here, to what is called the afterlife, which is really a misnomer because there's only one life, so it doesn't really end, it just changes. When we move on, the slate is not going to be wiped clean. You get it? I'm going to expand on that. And by that I mean, we are more than likely not going to wake up on the other side, as they say, as this wonderful, evolved, enlightened, angelic being who knows all the answers, has perfect skin and a beautiful body, and never gets angry, confused, or scared. All right, the likelihood of that happening, switching to that, is very small. In fact, in The Science of Mind, what we call our textbook, Dr. Ernest Holmes, shares with us his opinion that when we die, we're going to be nothing more or less than a continuation of the same consciousness we had when our life ended on this plane in every single way. Every single way. Same beliefs, same desires, same problems, same sense of humor, same delightful or annoying personality, whatever it happens to be. Or in the words of Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, my teacher's teacher, he wrote a little pamphlet once, and it was called, which is where I got the title of my talk, Nobody Improves by Dying. It's a great little pamphlet if you can find it on Amazon. In other words, when we cross over, another term people use, we won't automatically get any better, and we won't automatically get any worse. We'll just sort of keep on keeping on, okay? We'll just continue to grow and evolve. We may get better, but it's not because we died, all right? Because that's what life does. Life expands and evolves, and it's going to do so in the next life as much as it is here. We are all individual expressions of that one life, okay? Which means we are as spiritual now as we are ever going to be. I heard that years ago from Dr. Schultz, and I always love that statement. Now, if you were raised as a Christian or a Catholic or maybe even Muslim, you might ask, if you're new here, what about heaven and hell? You know, you talk to a lot of people, they can't talk about death without talking about those things. What about purgatory or limbo or paradise or whatever it happens to be, or all the other good and bad places that the traditional teachings tell us about? So let's talk about that. As many of you know, at least if you've been coming here for a little while, we don't believe in those places here, at least not in the same way the traditional teachings talk about it, the way they're described by people who believe that life is all about rewards and punishments and keeping God happy. For a lot of people in the world, heaven is a place where everything is happy and perfect, and hell is a really awful place for God to send the people you don't like. That's what it is for a lot of different teachings, okay? Now, theologically, which means religious dogma and all that, that's a very convenient arrangement because it helps to keep people in line. That's why it started like that. But from a purely spiritual perspective, or what we might call a metaphysical perspective, it's hard for me to believe that an intelligent creative power would create us and cause us to go through all these different life experiences to the point where we start to grow and learn how to do the things we want and add value to the world, and then either burn us up or put us on a cloud forever. Doesn't make any sense to me. You see, when we speak about life everlasting here, we're talking about life that continues beyond what most people call our physical death. Because our intuition, which is that spiritual connection we have with knowledge, as it exists as God, our intuition tells us that the life that we're experiencing now is just one small part of something that's a whole lot bigger. And we may not know exactly what that something is, but we believe it exists. Something in us tells us. So the question now becomes, once we start thinking that way, of this being one part of a greater life, what does that larger life look like? That's a valid question. And the only intelligent answer is, it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference because we are not going to know until we get there. That's what we believe. So the best thing we can do is simply to accept where we are in this place, in this time, and live the best way we know how until we move on to the next level, which shouldn't be nearly as difficult or frightening as some people seem to think. Now, there's a story to highlight this. I told it years ago, I think, last time I told it, but some of you may remember it. And it's a story about a man who is involved in a terrible automobile accident. And spoiler alert, he dies. He doesn't know it at the time, but he does. So he wakes up sometime later, and he's lying on grass. Beautiful grass, very green, in what looks like a park. And the sun is warm, and the air is cool, the weather is beautiful. There are people walking around, nicely dressed. People are riding bicycles, kids are playing with dogs, all the things that happen over at Piedmont Park on a day like today. And some of the people come up to him and they ask him, well, how do you feel? And he says, where am I? What's going on? And they just smile and they move on. So he gets up and he walks around a little bit. And this well-dressed middle-aged man comes walking up to him. And he says, how do you do, sir? My name is Satan. Welcome to hell. Is everything to your satisfaction? So the guy says, excuse me, as he might say. And Satan says, I know this must be confusing, so why don't you come with me and I'll show you around. So Satan shows him around the park, and he shows him this lovely little bungalow where he's going to live with his 19-year-old Swedish assistant. You pick the sex, you know. You pick the gender. Up to you, okay. And they walk into a small town just a couple blocks away, very nearby, and he takes him around. It's got excellent restaurants. They're all 5-star food with no calories. Beautiful shops with wonderful clothes, and he goes in, and the clothes are all free, and the clerks and the people in these stores are young and nice-looking and very, very pleasant, very, very helpful. And Satan is this absolutely delightful host, very, very charming. Well, they reach the end of the main street, and Satan is about to bring him back to his house where he's going to be staying. And the man decides he's going to look around the corner of the last building on the street. So he peeks around the corner, and there about a half a mile away is this huge mountain of burning coals. And there are people lying on these coals, and their flesh is burning off, and there are demons laughing and stabbing him with pitchforks. And the man screams, "Oh my God, what's that?" And Satan says, "Oh, those are the Catholics. They seem to prefer it that way." Okay? Now, you can use Baptist, you can use Methodist, you can use whatever you want. I happen to be raised Catholic, so I felt I could do that, okay? And that leads me to the second thing that I want to talk about, the thing that we need to stop doing. We not only need to stop being afraid of death, we need to move even further than that. We need to stop taking it so seriously. We do. Robin Williams, the late great, he once said, "Death is nature's way of telling you your table is ready." I always thought that was a great statement. And in a more spiritual vein, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who wrote the definitive book on death and dying back in the 60s, she said this. It's really lovely. She said, "Death is simply a shedding of the physical body like the butterfly coming out of a cocoon." Isn't that a beautiful visual? And then she says, "It's like putting away your winter coat when spring finally comes." Another beautiful visual. But what most people don't realize is even though our physical body falls away, our consciousness, which is what we really are, doesn't change. I mean, why should it? Our intelligence and our personality and our emotional state, our emotional maturity, all of which are non-physical but still completely ours, stay the same. The only thing that changes is the venue, really, if you think about it. I mean, if we're depressed or lonely or angry when we leave, the odds are, at least for a little while when we get to where we're going, we're not going to pass through some magical veil that instantly makes everything all happy and joyful forever. That's sort of like hoping your life will improve if you buy a new suit or if you move to a different town. It may improve for a little while, but it's not going to improve until you start changing at the level of consciousness. Now, it's not unusual for us to fear the unknown. I mean, that's perfectly natural. It seems to be part of our state. But it isn't necessary and it isn't mandatory. It's just something we seem to do because we love drama. We do. We love drama. But if we start looking at life as this never-ending continuum, or if we start to look at death as just another part of life, sort of another step in a never-ending journey that constantly changes and offers us new opportunities and new challenges, there's a good chance, if we start to think that way here and now, there's a good chance that something wonderful is going to happen, which is this. Not only will we start to think about death and dying in a better way, we'll start looking at our present life in a better way too, which is a real, real plus. Once we realize that we are the only ones who can shape this life that we are living, now or ever, we can stop feeling pressured to either get everything done or to regret the things that we haven't accomplished. When we all realize that we have all of eternity to get things done, we can leave a little more time for what we have hopefully discovered to be the more important things in life, like spending time with our loved ones or being good to ourselves. But at the same time, while we're doing that, the day-to-day stuff, we can also get started on what we might call some longer-term projects, like learning how to practice compassion for all of humanity, or how to love our enemies, something all the teachers taught us, or how to stop judging other people. That's always a good one. Now, that kind of stuff might take a little longer than one lifetime. It may, okay? But that's okay, because in a very real sense, we have all the time in the world. The Buddhists have a saying, it all goes towards 10,000 lifetimes. Really kind of puts things in perspective. Now, in saying all this, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it shouldn't hurt when someone we love passes on, especially if it's unexpectedly, all right? Especially if it's someone who has been a truly important part of our life, a spouse, a partner, a parent, a child, a sibling, a friend, whatever it is. But in one sense, once we get past the shock of it, we can let it hurt in the same way that it would if they moved far away and we weren't going to be able to see them for a long time. We can still communicate with them, like Angela was talking about, on the level of their being a part of us, even though their physical form is no longer here. But if while we are here, we lived a wonderful, happy life where we told that person we loved them every time we saw them and we did things with them and they were truly a part of our life and we were a part of theirs, all right? If we did that, then the memory is going to be more bearable because of the love that we shared together. However, and this is important, the only way we can have those kind of memories when that happens is to live and love to the best of our ability, starting right now. Now is the time to prepare. Right now and every single day until the day where one of us leaves while the other stays behind. I'm also not saying that our own process of transition is necessarily going to be easy or fun. I've seen enough people leave that frequently it isn't. Now, it may still be a very enriching experience, or it may not. That's still up to us. Depending upon our overall state of mind and heart as we're living our life, depending on what we think and feel about God, about ourselves, about the person, all these things, our own death can be a negative or a positive experience. But I can promise you this. It's going to be a lot less difficult if, number one, our mind and heart are at peace with every single person in our life, including the person who is leaving us, and two, if we are personally satisfied and fulfilled with the life we've lived up to that point, no matter what that life looks like. What we have to remember is the time to make both of these things happen is not the day before we're on our way out. The time to make these things happen is not when we're lying on our deathbed. The time to make these things a part of our continuing consciousness going forward is now, today, long before we or they die. Besides, we're going to want to be able to do all these things later on, somewhere in some lifetime, so why not start now? There was a woman by the name of Anais Nin. She was a writer and producer, died in the 70s, brilliant woman. And she once made a very profound statement, one of my favorite when it comes to this subject. She said, people who live deeply have no fear of death. People who live deeply, meaning every moment of every day, have no fear of death. I believe that's true intuitively. I mean, there's a lot to be said for being completely centered and present in our own life, no matter who we're with, both now and later. Or think about it this way, kind of an easy example. We all went through a fairly traumatic transition from one life to the next when we were born, right? At one moment we weren't here, and then we were, okay? So we went from one phase of life to another. Now, we may not remember it, but I think it's pretty safe to say that most of us didn't know what to expect when we got here. Probably. Don't you think, those of you who have had children? And we still turned out all right. Things worked out. We had the opportunities to grow and expand. And even during our time that we're living here, all right, the life we're living now, even the life you're living at this moment is probably very different from what you thought it was going to be 20 years ago. How many of you are living exactly the same life you thought you were going to be living 20 years ago? Probably not many. And I'm just raising my hand demonstrating. I didn't either. Okay? So the idea that the afterlife is going to be a surprise is probably a pretty good assumption. But we have all been given the mental and spiritual strength and the tools to handle it. That's part of our spiritual birthright as we move on from phase to phase to phase. So all we have to do now is just show up and do the next best thing. Now, some people spend a lot of their spiritual effort trying to figure out what life was like before they got here, all this past life regression stuff, or what it's going to be like after they leave. But I believe that even if we could know those things, which we probably can't, they would distract us from what we need to be learning now. And what are we supposed to be learning now? I think that's pretty easy. I think we're supposed to learn how to love ourselves. I think we're supposed to learn how to love other people. I think we're supposed to learn how to manifest. That's why we have a physical universe. And I say manifest, not so we can get stuff. I think we're here to learn how to manifest so we can stop worrying about manifesting. Once we know we can do it, then we don't have to worry about it. Okay, we've all been given this vehicle that we call our physical body that can hug people and touch people and we can see. We've got these incredible senses that can see sunsets and art. We can hear music. We've all got this incredible body that can experience this present physical world in amazing ways, okay, to make our life more interesting and enjoyable in the process. But once we have spent a sufficient amount of time here, and for some people that may be 102 years old. I just had a great aunt last month die at 103. So now the matriarch of our family is her younger sister who is 102. It's great. Thank you, Mom, for those genes. I appreciate it if you're listening. It may be 2 years old. We don't know what a sufficient amount of time is. Once we have filled this cosmic square, so to speak, once we've checked it off, in whatever way our higher self is going to check it off, then we're free to move on and continue learning and growing and learning these things that we've been here to learn, only in a different way and in different surroundings. Or maybe not so different. Who knows? The great truth of our being is that all of life is in perfect harmony, and our journey through it is part of that harmony. That's what we have to remember, all right? Dr. Barker says, at the next level, we are going to end up right where we deserve to be by right of consciousness, just like we are here. I think that's a great statement, okay? And what he means is there is a law of attraction. Some of us have heard that term. There's a law of cause and effect that always makes sure that we are right where we belong. We just have to trust that it works. I want to close today with a quote from Dr. Holmes from The Science of Mind. There's a chapter, I can't remember what number, I think it's 17 or 22, one of those numbers that sticks in my head, in The Science of Mind. And the chapter is called Immortality. I highly recommend, if you don't read anything else in the book, read the introduction, the four sections, and this chapter on immortality. It's one of the most simple and beautiful descriptions I've ever read about death as one more step in the process of life. So this is what he says. It's a paragraph, a few sentences. Dr. Holmes says, "Nature will not let us stay in any one place too long. She will let us stay only long enough to gather the experience necessary to the unfolding and the advancement of the soul. This is a wise provision, for should we stay here too long, we would become too set, too rigid, and too inflexible." So he says, "Nature demands the change, the thing we call death, in order that we may advance, that our spirit may advance, and when that change comes, we should welcome it with a smile on our lips and a song in our heart." Isn't that beautiful? I couldn't have said it better myself. Anyway, hope this gave you a couple things to think about, because this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. So it is. All right. Thank you. Thank you. All right. I know for some of you a difficult subject, but for all of us, something that's simply a part of life. So take the ideas that resonated with you. I give them to you freely. Set aside the others and let's know this together. I know that life is greater than what I see. It's greater than what I feel. It's greater than what I know right now. I know that life is that which has no beginning and no end. It has no size, no space, no time. It is all things. I know that life is synonymous with God, with spirit, with the power that creates everything out of itself. And so I know that every part of my life possesses all the attributes of this creative power: intelligence, love, creativity, expression, joy, life, love, light, peace, power, beauty, and joy, as Thomas Troward said. So as I recognize this, I stop living and I start being alive. I start being alive, whatever the situation, whatever I'm facing, whatever challenges. I start being alive when I'm around those who may be moving on. I start being alive when I am suffering the pain of losing someone I care for deeply, and I start being alive even as I begin to move from this plane to the next. As I do this, and I start expressing life in everything I do, life expands without limit. Opportunities to love, to create, to enjoy, to play, to live life deeply. Those opportunities begin to appear to me more and more often in greater and greater ways. And I stop being afraid. I stop being afraid of an ending. I stop being afraid of a beginning. And I simply accept that it is all one. So knowing this, I no longer give power to the fears of a world that tells me that I should be afraid. I no longer give any power to ideas of hatred or people who want to control life. I simply live mine as well as I can. And I give thanks. I give deep thanks for everything that I've been given and everything that I have yet to give. I'm grateful for the life I have had. I'm grateful for the life I have now. And I'm grateful for what is to come. I say thank you, Spirit, for being me. Knowing this, I accept this idea as the truth in my life completely. I accept it and I release it into consciousness, knowing that it is the truth for me and every other person from this moment on. Join me in saying, and so it is.